3. Shuttles away, said Jet. Ula fell back into the co-pilot's seat, watching the telemetry confirming Jet's simple statement. The combined Imperial Republic fleet had obeyed his order to deploy. Their mad plan might actually work. In the next hour, 4,000 people would converge on Sabaton singly, there to recombine as attack squads to take out primary and secondary objectives. The Jedi and the Sith would lead the attack on the equator, while ordinary soldiers, including Lorin, would attack the Master Factory at the pole. Another 2,000 would remain in orbit, keeping the skies clear of hexes and providing occasional bombardment of the ground below. The rest would provide vital support from several distributed HQs, two of which were on the Commoner and the Paramount. All reporting to him. And to Jet and Clunker. The smuggler had refused all offers of security details, comm officers, and gunners, on the grounds that he didn't want a potentially fractious crew. Choosing one side over another would be politically fraught.
Don't we at least need someone to help defend us?
Ula had asked him, slightly aghast at how vulnerable that would leave them.
Not at all. Clunker can operate the tri-lasers by remote from the bridge.
So what was all that on Hutta about needing a crew? Why have you ever needed a crew at all?
Jet had smiled.
For the company.
Ula now wondered if it was for an entirely different reason. For a cover. He had noted how silent Jet was most of the time. When he wasn't play-acting the role of a dissolute smuggler, he was watching and listening to everything going on around him. And now, somehow, he had inveigled himself into the center of everything. He was privy to every order that came through the Auriga fire. Every piece of information on which Ula based those orders was filtered through Jet's sensors. If Jet pulled the plug, the combined fleet would be left leaderless. Ula reassured himself that this wasn't Jet's style, that if he ever were to try to change the course of the battle, he would do so in a much subtler fashion. Still, Ula would be on the ball for anything at all, and had armed himself with a new holdout blaster, just in case.
Deploy fighters, he ordered the fleet. Commence bombardment of primary targets.
Instantly, the dots in the main display began to shift. 4 squadrons of mixed Mark VI Imperial interceptors and Republic XA-8 starfighters would strafe the orbital shell of hexes with laser cannons and proton torpedoes, creating holes in 4 crucial locations. 2 of those locations would allow the all-important troop transports access to lower orbit, there to discharge the free jumpers, Lorin among them. It was vital they weren't interfered with en route. The other 2 orbital holes would provide critical windows for the bombardment from Paramount, mainly by B-28s with Imperial pilots. In the first engagement, 20% of the missiles launched at the planet had been disabled during descent by interfering hexes. Every shot fired now had to count. The interceptors and starfighters hit the shell of hexes. Space lit up with explosions, sparkling almost delicately in the distance. The Auriga fire maintained a respectful distance from both main attack forces and the combined Republic Imperial fleets, stationed at a point equidistant between the planet and its moon. But it wasn't the only ship ranging freely across the battlefield.
We're receiving a hail from the First Blood, said Jet.
Put him on.
I'm noting an increase in subspace communications,
said Douse Driver in miniature. His face was one of